This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 62 with Taz Gray. Welcome along to another episode of the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and once again for this episode, I'm joined by Taz Gray. Taz, welcome.
Thanks, Robert. How are you?
Not too bad. Another week down. A lot happening in the Office 365 sphere, which we will again cover off before we jump into a bit of a discussion around some of the technologies. But just in case people aren't aware of who you are and where you've come from, do you want to give them a quick update on how to get in touch with you and what sort of things you do?
Sure, yeah. Look, I run a business in Melbourne, Axiom IT. We do a lot of work with Office 365. If people want to get in touch with me, they can look me up online, Twitter, Tas Gray, T-A-S-G-R-A-Y, and LinkedIn, of course. Just search for me there. And obviously through our website, Axiom IT, AXIOMIT.com.au.
Cool. All right. Well, most of the information that I put up will be on my website, or the best place is generally my blog, which is blog.ciaops.com. And I'll be posting up all the show notes and information about this episode. So let's kick it off with a bit of news. I think the biggest news that's come out of the Office 365 space this week, which I'd be interested to get your feedback on, is the fact that Microsoft have announced they will be renaming Link to Skype for Business. So Link is the communications or the instant messaging web conferencing tool from Microsoft. It was an on-premise service, and Microsoft moved it to the cloud as part of Office 365. And obviously since then they have bought Skype, and merrily the two products have been separated. But now they're basically, looks as though they're removing the Link brand and replacing it with Skype, giving the Link the nice once-over to make it look like Skype. My understanding is the underneath, the internal still remain Link, but they're moving obviously to a more consumer-friendly brand. So, I mean, what's your take on this change?
Yeah, look, I think it's a good idea. It's Link's certainly something that a lot of people are probably not familiar with unless they've worked in the corporate arena. So giving it Skype for Business as a label, I think is a good move by Microsoft. It certainly makes it more familiar.
Well, I think that it's very interesting that the blog post that I wrote about it said that, to me, I don't like the concept of having Skype and Skype for Business. It gets a bit confusing, which we've seen with OneDrive and OneDrive for Business. That aside, I think that it indicates that Microsoft is focusing on the consumer. So the Link was very much an enterprise brand, and Skype for was very much around consumers. So giving it the look and feel of Skype, giving it the same branding, the same naming, I think is an indication of the way that Microsoft's thinking and presenting the product to the market. So I think that's a good move. I also think consolidating the brands, moving away from having two separate products, avoids confusion. Although, again, I seem to be a little bit hesitant about Link for Business, because a good example is a not-for-profit. Am I a Link for Business, or am I a Link standalone? So again, I think it creates a bit of confusion. So, I mean, do you see that as well? Is that something that you would see as being an issue potentially?
Yeah, and hadn't actually thought of that till you brought it up, Robert. So that, yeah, that's a very good point, because definitely in OneDrive and OneDrive for Business, there is confusion surrounding those two products. So whether or not we'll see that happen again will be interesting, but I'm not sure.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's not coming, obviously, Office 365 until 2015, but again, it's obviously a major change. It has upset, as you would expect, some members of the technical community who are very Link-focused. Microsoft maintain they'll be making a Skype server coming forward for on-premise, but the main change for us is that it will just happen seamlessly in Office 365. And all users will now soon get Skype for Business. So it'll be very interesting to see. And some of the key features maybe in Link, which is persistent, something like persistent conversations across devices, would be very handy, which is something I don't think Link does at this point. So if they amalgamate the two, bring the best features together in one product, big positive. But again, let's see what else they do bring out. Now, there's been, I suppose I'll pause and make a bit of a comment here. It's very interesting to me that Microsoft's had a big week or a big couple of weeks with a lot of announcements. One of the obviously the major one was the Link and Skype renaming. But they've released, again, we'll run through some of these, some of the major updates of late, and there's been half a dozen or so. And again, it just quietly goes through the market. If another provider announced one or two products, it'd be, you know, major things and carry-ons, and you know, everybody would be lauding that. But it's very interesting that Microsoft has made some major announcements this week, and most of them simply haven't got very, very much press. Now, whether that's the fact that people aren't keeping up, whether it's the fact things are changing so rapidly, it's a very interesting paradigm that Microsoft is seen as an old world company, yet it's bringing so much of the new technologies, the new updates to its Office 365 cloud-based product, and maybe not receiving the kudos. I mean, just on that, what's your feeling? Is that something that, you know, Microsoft releases something and it just gets taken for granted?
Oh, look, I do think you're right. There is just so much happening and so much changing right now that it's probably quite hard to keep track of. I know even from my perspective, being an IT professional, I still have to spend quite a bit of time just staying across these things. So, you know, I guess it doesn't surprise me all that much.
So that's why you're on this podcast, see, so you can keep up, isn't that it?
Oh, absolutely. It certainly helps.
Okay, so one of the things that let's run through a couple of these. So one of the things Microsoft announced was that you can now use your Office 365 credentials to sign into Yammer. So Yammer is something we discussed last week in a bit of depth. It basically is a social networking platform for Office 365. At the moment, you have to log into it with separate set of credentials. And Microsoft did purchase Yammer a number of years ago, and it's working hard to integrate the two. So again, this is a step in the direction of that Office 365 credentials will automatically get you into both products. And Microsoft, like I said, working hard to integrate the two. So I think that's, again, a major benefit. We're going to see an indication of how the product's coming together. Now, the next update is Microsoft has announced that it is going to allow multi-factor authentication for its client applications. So Office 2013, so Outlook, OneNote, Word, and Excel, will be able to work with the multi-factor authentications. That means you'll be able to get an SMS code, and that will, when the application launches, you'll need to put in your login and your password, and then the code that you're given to access the applications. You can do that now with an Office 365 login, but basically through the web. So again, obviously increasing the security for those that need it and working to integrate all their products together. So just on those two, any comment, any feedback on those two from your point of view?
Yeah, so Robert, with the multi-factor authentication, would that be every time you log into Office, or once you're logged in, it stays logged in and you don't need to do it again? Because I can imagine that could be a little bit intrusive.
I think the case is, I have to look at it in detail, but my understanding probably is that once the application is up and running, you're prompted for it initially, and it stays, as long as the application stays running, that's fine. I would also think there's the ability to configure it to turn it off and turn it on. So you might choose to have multi-factor authentication turned on for the first application of the day, perhaps, and then you need it no further. But I think that, again, it's something that most people have to work with and work out what works best for them and their users. It's not something recommended for every user all the time, but for those who are really paranoid or perhaps who are using applications in a public area, I think it's a very good move. So it's a matter of just going in there, trying it out, seeing what's involved.
Yeah, definitely. I think the cloud does often get looked at as a security threat for a lot of people. So having that extra layer of security there that you can show to potential clients is certainly a good thing. So I think that's good news.
All right. So the other thing that they've announced, which will sort of lead into our discussion today, is that Microsoft has announced a product or an add-on to their Exchange Online called Clutter. So the idea is that Clutter uses the machine learning to be able to work out what's important in your inbox, and then will automatically move that into a subfolder called Clutter. Now, to get this, what you'll need to do is you'll need to firstly enable the Office 365 first release. Now, the way that you do that is you log into your Office 365 portal as an admin. On the left-hand side, you'll see Service Settings. Under Service Settings, you'll find an option called Updates. And then when you select that, you'll have an option called First Release on the right-hand side, which you can then turn on. Now, once that's turned on, All the latest features will become available to you as quickly as possible. So if you're looking to get your hands on this sort of stuff early, you firstly need to turn on that first release option. Now, once you turn that on, typically you'll see Clutter appear almost immediately. It will then start to work. Now, the way that Clutter operates is it uses what's called machine learning. So basically, Microsoft has a product which it calls Office Graph. Office Graph connects to another product which we'll mention shortly called Delve. And it looks at the interactions you have with the mail, who it's sent from, what it contains, and makes the decisions to move that mail. It's a bit like email rules, but the idea is it's far more intelligent. Now, you can obviously overwrite that. You can say, look, this isn't clutter. This is. By simply dragging and dropping mail between folders, Clutter will learn. So the difference here is that normally with email rules, you set down a hard rule. If it doesn't match the rule, then the email isn't moved. In this case, you're relying on the algorithm or the machine to make those sort of decisions for you. So I don't think you have yet seen that, Taz, at all in your tenant?
No, I haven't seen that yet, but I am looking forward to it.
How do you find your users typically, you know, is it one inbox with a million items, or do they do, you know, folders and subfolders? I mean, how do they manage the volume of emails they see?
Yeah, it's very much an individual thing, and you know, you get the people who are very organized that have a folder for everything, and I guess at the end of the day they're aiming for a zero inbox. That's personally how I like to do it as well. Other people just rely on the search, leave everything in the inbox and just search for what they need, which works quite well too. So I guess it's personal preference.
And what's your thinking on, you know, the reliance of email? So I'm very much of the opinion that emails, although they seem to be, you know, there's so many more of them every day, but we're becoming less and less reliant on them because for two reasons. Firstly, the younger generation are moving to social interactions rather than siloed email discussions. And the other thing too is I think that unfortunately email is just being used for all the wrong purposes. So many people I see simply use it as a filing system, use it as a dumping ground, they have everything in there. And I don't know if you've had the experience of that when users migrate to the cloud or migrate to Office 365, they've been using their deleted items as a filing system, and by default that gets cleared out after 14 days in Office 365, and they become very distressed when their filing system, in deleted items mind you, suddenly disappears.
Yes, and I have had experiences like that before, and
exactly. So I think that you know, that's part of the challenge. We're moving from a space where, you know, clients I suppose could do bad things, or they could do non-standard things, to a world which is enterprise focused, which is really about policies and procedures and best practices, and that's obviously a challenge. I mean, how do you see that? How do you see that with, you know, the customers you have?
Yeah, look, I mean, the things you just mentioned, I do see that going on, and I'm not sure how this is going to translate into the new Office 365 way of doing things. It's going to be interesting to see. Some people will adapt well, I think. Other people may resist. I really don't know. I couldn't comment too much more on that right now, Robert.
It's like the Borg. Resistance is futile. Haven't you heard that? I think the thing is that what we've got now with the Office 365, especially now with the Office 365, is we have so many tools that can be used to improve the productivity of our business. We need to look at them and work out what works best for us. I mean, we've got so many options, which is fantastic. So I think that simply moving what you're doing on-premise to Office 365 and not exploring these options is very limiting. You're not getting value for money. I think it's important to take advantage of some of these features because they can certainly make your life a lot simpler. So a lot of that, I think, as we will get into it, is about the social side of things. I think the world is moving from a siloed version of I send you an email to a situation where we share that information through a public forum. Now, my assertion is that most emails you get probably today don't really need to be public. Don't really need to be private. They could actually be put in somewhere to be shared with people if the information was valuable. So rather than getting these one pieces of information that you act on, maybe it's better if they live in a common area where if somebody else needed that information, they could access it without having to go into your silo or whatever. So, I mean, what's your feeling on that sort of, you know, the movement that way?
Yeah, look, I think that's without a doubt is the way everything is going. And companies are going to have to start working that way or they're going to get left behind, I believe. So we've certainly come from a time where email was the be-all and end-all in terms of business communication, and that was really due to a lack of alternative, which that problem has now gone away with Office 365 because, as you say, there are so many tools available as a result of being on the platform that it's almost an overwhelming experience just to go out and figure out exactly what's available and then what you can do with it. So,
and I think the challenge is that, and this is the unfortunate side that I see, the IT provider, the IT reseller, is unfortunately behind the game in this respect. They're not looking at these tools. They're not looking at using Yammer. They're not looking at using, Clutter and these sort of things. And unfortunately, what happens is the client discovers it, starts using it, may have issues, and then has to have that stuff undone to be done properly. So there's a big requirement for IT resellers or whomever to get in front of the game here. Now, that obviously means that they're going to have to work a bit harder. They've got more stuff they've got to get across. There's more challenges, those sort of things. But there are solutions to do that. So they don't have to do it all themselves. They can obviously work with others who do that for a living and work with them. Or they can find a staff member who's very keen to bring them up to date. But I see these sort of tools as very, very key, because a lot of the resellers I deal with is their customers are coming to the reseller saying, oh, hang on, we want to set up this Yammer. We want to have this Yammer working. We want to have a SharePoint team site. We want to do workflows. And the reseller's just lost. They basically can't respond to that. Now, that's a dangerous situation to be in when your customer's coming to you asking about features that they've discovered, they've got, and you're really not able to help them. Would you agree?
Definitely. And I think, there's a whole new opportunity out there now to, again, be ahead of what's happening and be that IT reseller who people can actually come to and you can implement these things for the business. It's certainly much less of a technical role now, as more of a consultant.
Yeah, and I think one of the, again, I wrote a blog post about how I dislike the term trusted advisor and prefer something like a virtual CIO, where you're basically ahead of the game, you're making recommendations to the business, you're showing them Yammer, you're implementing, you're doing proof of concept, so you're ahead of the game. That's, I think, where you need to be. And I think the move away from the MSP model to a user enablement model is more what we're after. So typically an MSP model is about maintaining devices, desktop servers, keeping them on track, stopping them from the red lights flashing and, keeping the thing up and running. And I think normally when the customer calls an MSP, it's always with a problem. This server doesn't work, I can get access to this. And I see that as being very frustrating for both parties. I think we need to move to a point where the user's ringing up saying, we've seen this Yammer, we want to enable this, or how do we better share this document, or how do we collaborate? So again, it's going in and saying, look, you've got the tools, this is how we build it, but I'm not seeing that sort of thing. So I certainly see that we need to move to an environment where we focus on enabling the user to use these tools, and that means obviously being across them, and that again means using them ourselves.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And look, I think that the MSP model is definitely changing because there's obviously less to do to keep these systems running, particularly if they're running in the cloud. But of course, there is still going to be that support that's required, because even in an ideal world, things still break and someone needs to know how to fix them. But if you compare that up with, as you say, being ahead of what's happening and really being across these tools and understanding what they can do and how you can implement them in someone's business, then you've got a great business, I think.
Well, I think the MSP model, like I said, is someone still needs to fix the items. But again, the way I look at that and the answer I have for that is let's have a look at it. Most people are not buying new desktops, they're buying new devices. And when that device fails, they will throw it out and they get a new one. So they really don't need a lot of maintenance on it. What they're looking for is the configuration and the enablement of that. Now, unfortunately, that means also that generally the price on maintaining those devices is going to go down because, that's the way the market's going. It's commoditizing the support and the maintenance of those devices. So to maintain that model as an MSP, you obviously need to get more and more clients, get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think that's fine for businesses that are already large and already have the infrastructure and the systems to do that. But the average SMB reseller is only, no more than five staff members. They're going to have a next to impossible task to scale up to a point where they can do that. So I think they certainly have their challenges. And again, there is a business model out there to be made. But as you indicate, it's a serious matter of sitting down and saying, you know what, is that the route we want to go down? Maybe it's more about us looking at how we can work out a model where we can help clients enable these services and, again, wrap our unique knowledge around that.
Yeah, look, I definitely think you need to lead with that now. Like, if you're a young business and you're starting out, you're not going to go in, you're not going to win the jobs if you're going after the MSP type stuff. You're gonna get priced out by the bigger guys, as you say, because they've got the economies of scale and they can do things for less. But if you go in there and you give a more personalized and more of a consulting type approach and look at how you can enable these things within a business, then you're going to win over those big MSPs who are just operating on scale and don't give that level of attention. So I think it actually creates an opportunity for you to segue in where those bigger players potentially can't or are not interested in doing because they don't have to.
I think that, again, it's a mindset change. And I think, unfortunately, it requires a lot of people now to consider their business model, look at their unique situation. Now, the MSP model was a very generic model. A lot of people jumped on board. It was easy to do what everybody else was doing. I just don't think that's possible anymore. I think you have to look at your individual situation and make decisions. And the other thing I think you need to look at is also you need to look at partnering up with people to fill in the gaps that you don't do. So, again, if you're not doing SharePoint, then you need to find someone who does SharePoint so you can offer that or come to some arrangement with them. Because part of the difference now is back in the SBS 2003 days, when I did that, I was quite happy that I could get my arms around everything. I knew everything about Windows Server, I knew ISA, I knew SQL, I knew the modem router, I could connect workstations up. I was very confident that I could do the whole network. But now, as those networks have increased in complexity and integrated into the cloud, there's simply no way I can do that. So part of my business model is I've unfortunately had to abandon doing the hardware. As much as I love plugging in RAM chips and putting in CPUs and listening to fans spin up, there's just no revenue in it for me. So again, I think they're decisions that people need to make.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, it is an individual thing, but whatever works, I suppose.
Yep. And I think an important thing is for the, you've got to focus on your business need. You know, why are you in the business that you're in? You know, again, everybody works for a reason. If you're just working because you've got no reason, well, then that's probably not a good thing. You need to say, well, I'm working, obviously, to achieve these goals, and that's what you need to keep in mind, and how am I going to best achieve those? Because if you're running a business, which is you, you're not running a business. You've actually just owned a job, so it's really as simple as that.
Definitely, I agree with all of those things.
Oh, it's nice to hear. So let's have a bit more deep dive onto this sort of machine learning topic. So one of the things we're seeing is that the move to social away from emails is a new paradigm for most people. Now, if you think of when your emails come into you, most people would say, I feel comfortable with emails because I know I'm getting them all. I'm able to have them in my inbox, open my inbox, look at them, do a search, do whatever I can. My counter to that is, well, you know what? You're probably getting so many emails that you're only reading 10 or 20% of them. You're accumulating them a bit like a, you know, basically a bowerbird, which basically accumulates bits and pieces. And you're not really being effective with it. Now, the change with social means that we now have to trust the algorithm to make decisions as to what is the best information for us. So if you look at Facebook, if you look at those sort of things, they're actually bubbling up to the top information which the algorithm believes is most relevant to you. So it looks at your interactions, it looks at what you click on, it looks at how long you dwell on certain items, and then it says, you know what, this person liked this, so therefore they're going to like something that's very similar. So I think we're moving from a technology base where we're using something individually and we had no intelligence in it to now a system where we've got so much information. The only way to manage it is to let the algorithm tell us or note what is important.
Yeah, look, definitely. I think with the growing amount of information that we have to deal with every day, there really is no other way to do this, Robert. Is my opinion.
Well, I think a good example here is, again, let's look at the Office 365 tool. So we've got obviously your inbox, you've got your emails, but day to day, I need to monitor social networking. I need to be involved in things like Yammer, and I also, you know, have all these other vehicles that come to me. Now, let's look at Yammer, for example. So we talked a bit about Yammer last week. So Yammer is a bit like an enterprise version of Facebook. We go in there, make conversations, and others can contribute. All the information is public. We can like, we can do all the same sort of things. We can follow people, follow conversations. But at the end of the day, when you go into Yammer, you'll see that the Yammer algorithm makes decisions about what's best for us. So if you're an IT reseller, there's a free Yammer network called the Office 365 Technical Network, which you can become a member of. There are 20,000, maybe 30,000 members in that, all banging away. Now, there's no way I'm going to be able to read posts from 30,000 members every day. So again, Yammer is making decisions and bubbling to the surface what's most important for me to look at based on my interactions. So I have to trust that. Now, if I want, I can select the option to read all, but that's rare. So this is the way I see it's going. Now, the advantage that it gives you is no longer is that information buried down the bottom. You can now search it. You can now follow individuals. You can move with the influencers to follow the information. And in Yammer, you can then go in and create subgroups, so special interest groups. So again, a good example is if you have a conference, what we can do is create a subgroup for all the individual sessions. And in those sessions, people can go in, post the slides, they can have conversations with the presenter. So all of that happens in a group off the side. If you're interested, you join into that. If you're not, you don't need to be part of it. So that's sort of the way we're working with a tool like Yammer. And I, again, a lot of people struggle to use it. We mentioned last week, you're not seeing a lot of it out there, but I certainly think that it will become bigger and bigger. And I'm seeing more and more people asking for it. I mean, you know, what's your feeling and thoughts out there in the market?
Yeah, look, the organizations that we're dealing with, I don't think any of them are using Yammer yet, but I think there's plenty of scope for them to use it. They just need to be shown how to do it. So I've had a couple of conversations with clients this week, I guess warming them up to the idea of, hey, what do you think about this idea? What if, you know, we could get some conversation happening between these groups of people in your business that, you know, might be happening on email, or, you know, might not even be happening at all. Let's open that up and see what happens. I think Yammer is a really powerful tool if you want to do those kind of things. And I think, yeah, businesses can benefit massively from that.
So have you got yourself involved in the free Yammer side of it, the networks that are out there for resellers as yet?
I haven't. What I have done, though, is we work in an office space. It's a co-working space. And this week I spent some time with the operator of that business, and we set up a Yammer group with a couple of groups actually for the space, one being social, one being the other building, the building we're in, just to, I guess, really see how we could try to make it work here. And yeah, I think it looks like it's going to be good. We just have to wait now and see what happens.
I think part of it also is much with SharePoint, it's, you know, 30% technology, but it's 70% business. The tool's only as good as the way you use it, as the interactions you have, and the policies you set around it. So most owners or managers that I see are petrified that, you know, Yammer is Facebook, and they'll end up with, you know, pictures of sandwiches and pictures of food and, you know, dirty jokes and all these, you know, lots and lots of pictures of cats on there. I think that's naturally what's going to happen if you leave it unfettered. But again, if you go to your employees and you say, look, you know, Yammer is this tool, this is what it's about, here's the training, this is what we want you to use it for. If you don't use it appropriately in this manner, then, you know, we'll basically either, you know, restrict your usage, or, you know, we'll have to speak to you about it. So I think, like any tool, I mean, you think about it, right? How many people use emails appropriately? You know, no one's ever taught anybody I know how to use emails appropriately in their business. So therefore, how do they use them? They use them like they do at home. They just accumulate them everywhere. They send them out to anybody. They keep huge amounts of information in there that they're not supposed to. So, again, I would also counter that in many cases, email is probably not being used as productively as it should have been, because there hasn't been training and there hasn't been the guidance around using that product. And that's really what's going to determine the success of any technology, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right about the 70-30 rule, especially now, you know, with... I mean, looking at Yammer, there was probably, I would say, 10% technical and 90%, you know, user adoption. It would be sort of where I would place it.
The big thing is it is a paradigm shift. And most managers are not of the generation where they've grown up or are comfortable with social tools. And that, again, limits their view. So, I mean, I've had interactions with people who wanted to, for example, managers who wanted to create a discussion list in SharePoint. And then they decided that they didn't want their staff to be able to contribute to that discussion. So they wanted an open-ended, you know, two-way discussion, but the staff weren't able to contribute. And it's like, hang on, how does that work? So part of that is a culture thing because, again, they're afraid staff might see something inappropriate. They may perhaps get criticised. They might see something that's not appropriate for the business. But I think they're very small risks compared to the large benefit of getting the information out there, visible, and making it available for anybody to come on board. And I think also, too, the other thing is you need to make it an appealing environment for new employees. So the new employee, the biggest issue that many employers are struggling with, especially we know IT providers, is quality staff. And a lot of that is not only down to finding the right person, but also giving them an environment in which they are able to work and which they want to work in, rather than say, look, okay, you've employed with us, we're a technology company, but we're still using Windows 7, we're still using Office 2010, we're still, you know, restricting your use of Facebook and things like that because we don't trust you. So is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think, yeah, you've got to, as a company, you've got to give your people the right tools to do their job. Otherwise, they're going to become unhappy, and unhappy staff is not a good thing.
And I'll push back again to the MSP businesses. I see so many small IT resellers that are doing MSP model, and the most sophisticated technology they're working with is email. You know, they migrate emails, they move emails. That's all they're doing. They're not doing anything, any enablement further than that. Now, again, for the new millennials coming into the business who've worked with social, who've worked with using that day in and day out, running on mobile devices, don't care on what operating system they're using generally, that's going to be a huge limiting factor if they come into a business and are suddenly forced to have to use emails, to have to use the distribution lists rather than, you know, putting in somewhere like Yammer or, you know, some social tool.
Yeah, I definitely think, and they will go around it, is
exactly
my opinion.
Exactly, and I think that's the risk you run, is if you don't provide those tools, then again, you end up with people who are, you know, coming up with other options. And we see that, where I see that all the time, is with Dropbox. You know, it's so difficult for me to share a file, so I'm going to install Dropbox and I'm going to share it. Done.
Yep. Very prevalent.
And I think part of that is that, firstly, the owner of the business doesn't understand, or is, you know, just wants to do things the same old way. The reseller isn't going to them saying, look, there is a better way, this is how we do it. And it's not going to happen without a bit of pain, without a bit of investment. But at the end of the day, it will make you more productive and, importantly, give you more control. But that's just not happening.
Yeah, well, and I think in many cases, Robert, the reseller actually doesn't know what the better way to do it is. And that's probably part of the issue as well. So,
well, part of that is, again, this is where we come back to this. You know, the workforce is changing, and small businesses that sell technology need to keep up with the technology because it impacts not only their business but also their ability with their customers. And I think that I just don't see that happening. And what I also see, apart from that, is a significant amount of resistance. You know, oh, we're not going to do Twitter, that's evil. We're not going to do Facebook, that's evil. You know, we're going to do, oh, this takes too much time. This is too much effort. Oh, why do we have to do this? This is too cumbersome. And it's a case of, hang on, you know, you guys are probably the ones that lined up at midnight to go and get Windows 95 when it comes out. And now you're pushing back on everything. It's complete change that I'm seeing.
Yeah, look, and I think as well, especially for the IT resellers, they've been in a very good position where they were able to, I guess, be that point of contact for most businesses, where they would rely on the IT reseller to be giving them the most up-to-date technology, whereas now we're on the other side of that, where it's really the reseller is behind, and the people, like the businesses, are going to the reseller and saying, well, why haven't we got this? Why haven't we got that? Because we're hearing about it, or we're seeing it online, or whatever the case may be. So I guess the industry did allow for a bit of laziness on their behalf, and now all of a sudden that's coming unstuck for some people.
Well, unfortunately, there's this thing called the interweb, and on that is this thing called search engines. And, you know, that's how people find information today. And unfortunately, like I said, generally, when you run a search, you have no idea what your customers are searching. You have no idea where they end up. And if they get into their mind this way of thinking or this product, you and I probably both know that if they get hooked on a product, it's very hard for you retroactively to go in there and maybe leverage it out when it's not appropriate. So again, my going back to being a CIO, not being a trusted advisor, is again, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well with younger businesses now too, for the basic needs, you could probably run a business with 10 staff. And if you're savvy, I think you could get away without an IT provider from if you were starting fresh.
Well, I think part of it too is if you've got somebody inside the business who's keen to take that technology lead and do that role, and I think there are more people who are doing that, and there are more people who are comfortable doing it now. You know, they're one of the things that you know, if I go and deal with companies, it's amazing how many people come to me and say, oh, I don't know how to use computers, I'm an idiot, I'm stupid, and it's like, no, it's not that at all. It's just you need to be shown how to use it, given a bit of training, invest a bit of your time. But it's amazing how low their confidence is. But on the other side, the millennials who've come into it and have had a computer and known it since day one, completely opposite end of the spectrum. They'll try anything. They'll download and install software. They'll get set something up and running really, really quickly. So I think that's where we're seeing, again, this major shift that's happening that many people don't seem to appreciate, is that people coming into the workforce now are far more technology friendly and far more, you know, comfortable using that technology, and they're going to use it straight away. And you know what? They want immediate results. They just run a search, click on a link, and they can have something up and running very, very quickly.
Yeah, and as a result of that, the IT businesses need to be a step ahead of those people and saying to them, well, yeah, you can do all that on your own, but if you come to us, we can add value in these ways. And that's where I think if you want to survive in the long term as an IT business, that's what you need to be doing. And I'm pretty sure you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Robert?
Well, I think part of it is again, you know, you can't do it all. There's no question about that. It's just too much to do. But part of that is saying, okay, these are the aspects that we're going to concentrate on. But one of the big things I have always advocated is you need to partner up with your peers. You need to work out a little, you know, carve a little spear for everybody, and then we all work together to provide those solutions, rather than typically it has been a lone gun approach. Now, I can do everything, my business, and we can do everything, you know, and the reality is you simply can't. They just don't have the expertise. You probably need to leverage off other experts to give you that. Now, for me, a good example is Azure. So Azure has now come up, is now becoming, you know, more and more prevalent. And again, resellers definitely aren't up to speed on the product. Now, I spend hours and hours and hours fiddling with it, working it out, making mistakes, destroying things. But if someone comes to me, I can give them the answer that they're looking for in 2 or 3 minutes rather than 20 hours of research. So there's a big benefit. So I think that's what you've got to look at, is the information's out there, but getting the right answer can take a long time, and that's where you're better off leveraging other people who are going to do this specifically day in and day out.
Yeah, and those people that are experienced, obviously, are going to know things that you probably won't unless you've done it yourself. So yeah, I definitely think there's value in that too.
And I think the important thing is to make sure that you look at doing that proactively. It's not much use going to trying to find an Azure expert at the very last minute when you're just about to start configuring a remote, you know, AD and all these sort of remote satellite sites. You've got to be doing that now. You need to be, you know, working out the experts that you need, budding up with them, introducing, getting comfortable with each other, starting the relationship dance if you want, so that when you do need them, you're already well along the path. I mean, you know, it takes a little while to get the relationship up and running and work out where everybody fits in and all that sort of stuff, so the customer sees a seamless result. And I see so many resellers all of a sudden, when something comes up or they're asked by a customer, a very good example is that even, what are we now, 2 years, 3 years into Office 365, resellers come to me and say, I've never sold Office 365, can you explain it to me? So, you know, that's really difficult to do.
Yeah, and that would be a very open-ended question, I would think, because it's, what do you want to know about Office 365?
Yeah, and I think that's the problem is, and then once you start explaining the licensing and the different options, and again, they just can't take the information in such a short period, they can't do it. So that then, if they have a customer who's asking for this, or, you know, demanding this, or wanting to have it implemented quickly, that puts them in a really bad light, because now they can't answer those questions, which to a customer seem easy, and the assumption is the IT provider should know them, but guess what? They don't. So again, I'm not saying it's easy, I'm not saying that it's simple, but I think the secret to it generally is, you know what, you have to do less. You have to pick the things you want to do and you're good at, and most importantly, you need to buddy up with others to fill in those gaps. And, you know, again, follow the influencers, talk to them. Someone who's doing that, they need to survive as well. So if they're doing, leading stuff and going through all the pain and trying to solve all this stuff, you know, they need to survive. If you want to leverage off that information, they need to eat as well. So again, you need to contribute to those people so that you can leverage off the information and the resources that they come up with.
Yeah, no, very good point, Robert.
So I think again, what we need to do is you look at the shift. We're seeing so many shifts in the industry all happening at once, and the one here we're talking about is the trust the algorithm. So there's so many cases where social is so important, and we just have to rely on the algorithm. So the clutter is a good example. A lot of questions I've seen is, well, what happens in this case? What happens when this happens? How do I configure this? I think in these days it's very hard because the algorithm is proprietary. So how Facebook arranges things is known to Facebook. How Google indexes up is up to Google. And we see, SEO experts who are trying to game the system. And you know what? In my experience, I've never seen many people do that successfully for a long period of time. So I think to some respect, you've got to trust the algorithm, work out the best optimal result you can get out of it. But I think part of it is, you know what, you've just got to let it go. You've just got to trust that it's going to give you the information that you want.
Yeah, and I think 9 times out of 10, it's going to do a better job than we are. So, and that's only going to get better over time as well. So, you'd be crazy to fight it.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting because I've been doing more work in Azure, and I don't know if you've heard of have you heard of Hadoop?
No.
Okay, so what Hadoop is I've heard it on the sidelines. It's a big data sort of thing, but the course that I'm doing at the moment has shown me how important it is. So Hadoop is an open source project that allows you basically to rummage through data and come out with trends. But I couldn't work out why it's so important, why it's becoming more prevalent. But as it turns out, is what happens is all that stuff that gets pumped into Facebook runs through Hadoop. Hadoop breaks up that information and then works out trends, puts it back together and uses that to surface the stuff that's interesting. So that's how the algorithm's working. It's using a technology like Hadoop to do machine learning and learn those sort of things. And once I'd understood all that, it's very interesting that Hadoop is included as an option in Azure. So again, if you're looking to move into that sort of sphere or to offer that service to clients or those sort of things, that's what we're seeing. Never before would a small business have been able to access the power of something like Hadoop because Hadoop works in clusters. So you've got different servers running different jobs and reporting back. You could never do that in your own premises generally. So again, with Azure, you spin it up, push a couple of buttons, and you can have your own Hadoop cluster up and running to analyze that sort of stuff. So again, a little bit of search, you begin to see how all this stuff is beginning to pull together. And another good example is that Office 360, all the server logs from Office 365 are sent to Azure and they're run through Hadoop and machine learning so that Office 365 and Microsoft can see if there are any inconsistencies and things that they should be looking at when it comes to security or issues with their servers. So there's a good example of something that we've never been able to do before, but using something like Azure and the cloud computing, we're able to achieve that.
So that's really interesting, Robert. So if you have a server sitting in your office, the logs are actually being sent up to Azure and they're being analyzed, are they? Is it?
Now what we're saying is the Office 365, so the Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, the servers that Microsoft use online are being
Okay.
sent to, an Azure, an area in Azure, and they're being analyzed. But
I see.
there's nothing that wouldn't stop you from taking the logs on-prem and you shipping them up to Azure and then running your Hadoop algorithms through them as well.
Okay, yeah, I
So yeah.
understand
But imagine again that what I'm saying is imagine how many servers Office 365 has. How are they going to manage and understand whether there are issues or there are security problems with any of them? Again, they just ship it off to a big disk somewhere. They then run Hadoop and machine learning over it. Out pops, something bad or something that should be noted. So that's the indication of what you can use those sort of tools for. And again, people come to me and say, "Oh, no, it's irrelevant to me. I wouldn't do this," but it's amazing how many times it is. If you look at purchases on the web, how many people hitting websites, analytics, the information that you can extract from that vast amount of data can be very, very insightful. So if you see a drop off in web traffic on your website, most people say, "Oh, I'm not really sure what that was," or maybe, blah, blah, blah. But if you had all those logs pumping into something like Azure and then running machine learning over it, you'd be able to work out potentially what the issue is and maybe rectify it.
Wow, okay, that's pretty powerful, I would imagine.
And again, then what you can do is if you set yourself up and you obviously invested the time and the effort, but if you came up with an algorithm that was able to produce a result, again, you could sell that. And if you wanted to, you could maybe bundle up that service and use Azure to provide that as well. So people could just provide their logs or pump their logs into somewhere, and you just run, you know, your Hadoop algorithm across it, and you end up giving them a result. So again, there's another example of, you know, potential wins we could have here. But that's the technology that things like Clutter, things like Yammer, those sort of social tools are using. They're using the Hadoop, which you, again, we can get access to give you a better result, because simply there is just too much information for us to get across.
And this is, I suppose, now leading into the next part of the discussion, I guess, Robert, which is the Office Graph.
Yeah, so what the Office Graph is again, what it does is looks at the interactions that you have between people in Office 365. So if you send an email, if I send you an email, that's one interaction. If we have a conversation on link or an IM on link, that's another interaction. So what the Office Graph does is look at those interactions and then says, you know what, this is the information that you should probably be looking at because other members of your team are. So for an example, if we have a meeting with four people, you know, and then after the meeting, I email you something, there's a good chance that the other people who are in that meeting would probably also need to see that information. So something like Office Graph is then that technology that goes in there and, you know, works that all out, and it surfaces it through tools like Delve. So Delve is included in Office 365, and think of it like Flipboard. So the idea is the Office Graph sits in the background, monitors the interactions you have with your contacts inside and outside the business, and then when you go to Delve, it then shows you a nice place card of the things ranked by relevance that you should be looking at. So again, it's a bit hard to sort of maybe get your mind across, but when you open it up and look at the social interactions and think about everything being opened, it can be quite powerful to surface information for people who may never see that.
Yeah, and I think they've said that what Delve actually does is proactively discovers personalized content for you without you actually having to search. So the information that it deems to be relevant will be put in front of you, meaning you don't have to go out looking for that, which for some people would work very well, I think.
Well, it's like the Flipboard analogy. For those of you who haven't got Flipboard on your device, I certainly recommend that you get Flipboard, and you can then select the number of topics you're interested in, and then Flipboard will push you relevant information from the web. Now, imagine that, where the decision is made also based on your interactions with other people. So it could look at who your friends are on Facebook, and if they find something interesting, that will then get a higher ranking. Now, again, roll that up into a business where you've got people interacting with documents and with suppliers and websites and those sort of things every day, that Delve can then look at it and say, you know what, I see that, you know, basically Fred over here thought this article was interesting and you're talking about the same thing in email, so maybe you should perhaps look at this, you know, this article as well.
Yeah, and one feature of Delve that I did see, which I thought was really cool, was that if you have a meeting coming up, it will look at that meeting in Outlook and it will prompt you on what documents you might want to take into that meeting based on conversations leading up to it and so on and so on. So it's almost becoming a PA in that situation.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that, like I said, the algorithm, you trust the machine, it knows your interactions, it knows the emails that you've got, and it you know, people would jump up and down and scream about privacy, but at the end of the day, it's helping you do your job better. In a Microsoft environment, we know that that's nice and secure and it's all controlled, but again, look at it on the other side, look at it on the positive. What can it do for your productivity? How can it make staff more you know, proactive in your business? How can it give them the information they want quicker? Because studies show that workers spend about 30% of their day searching for information. Now, if you blow that out over a year, that's an extra month a year most businesses are giving their employees just to search for information.
Yeah, and I imagine on the traditional network folders, that's not a very efficient process at all. And I still think there are a lot of people, especially in the SMB space, who operate that way. So,
and part of it is the biggest resistance is not technology. The biggest resistance is they don't want to change the way they've always worked. Now, files and folders are great. We understand. And I had some plenty of SharePoint people that, you know, they basically just want to take their files and folders from their SMB shares on their network, copy them into SharePoint, and then it's done. That's collaboration. And you say, hang on, you know, that's not. You've just replicated exactly the same thing. And a new person coming in has got no idea what your files and folder structure are. How are they supposed to find information? So again, the biggest struggle or the biggest challenge, let me say, is to change the mindset. And that's taking a long while because people who aren't familiar with it are resistant to change and it's slowing things down. But as you mentioned, the newer businesses, the people coming on board, just take this and run a mile. It's amazing the difference when the thing opens up, the differences they have in their business and how much more open it is and how much more engaging it is and how much more involved the employees are from the top to the bottom when they have access to these sort of tools and they trust the algorithm to give them the information every day that they need without them having to go and rummage through everything and find what's changed.
Yeah, and I mean, the amount of information that comes at us now is just so overwhelming that without something like this, I would say it's just about impossible to be efficient.
We're also seeing that it's not only Office 365 that's doing this. We're seeing that, you know, Google's come up with their new inbox tool. You know, there are plenty of people that are trying to tackle this problem. And at the end of the day, you're right. The only way that we can do it is to trust the algorithm. The algorithms are getting smart enough, and the storage and the computing power at the back end is giving us this ability to actually know more about us. Now, again, that's a scary thing, but if we want to be productive, we have to go through so much information. So a good example is, I mean, you think about, you know, an average day for yourself. How much information do you need to be across to do your job, even on a weekly basis?
Yeah, it's huge, and, you know, we're in a small business, so in a large corporate environment, I can only imagine the number of meetings people are going to and this kind of stuff. It would be huge.
And then if you then expand that out one more level to all the interactions that business has with its customers, with its vendors, with its all these other people, again, that then not only it multiplies that effect and becomes exponential. So again, that's what we're seeing. Now, the businesses that are effective, that businesses that are able to manage that are the ones that are going to be successful. And you know what? The tools are here to do it right here, right now. They're in Office 365, they're in other cloud-based applications, but again, it's a mindset change. You need somebody to sit down and say, you know, we're going to use these. There's going to be a bit of pain, a bit of learning, but at the end of the day, we're confident that this is going to pop out and give us a big productivity bonus. And the big one for me, again, at this stage is Yammer. Yammer is just such a fantastic tool that so many people are just shying away from.
Yeah, yeah. And it's that short-term pain for the long-term gain sort of situation, isn't it, Robert?
Oh, absolutely. And again, we have to invest to get the ROI. I mean, think about when people, you know, first powered up a spreadsheet. It's like, what the hell does this do? Why can't I keep using my pen and paper? What do you mean that I've got to type numbers in and do all this sort of stuff? But you know what? I don't think there'd be a person today that can survive without a spreadsheet somewhere or somehow. So, and where I think the big fall down is again, customers are looking for help on how to implement it, how it makes, you know, relevance for their business. How do I implement this? How do I make sense of a tool like Yammer? And of course, the first person they're going to turn to is their IT provider. If their IT provider doesn't know, well then, where do they go? Who do they look for? That's the big challenge.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I agree with that.
And I think that's the investment that needs to be made. And again, even if your business isn't into Yammer, even if your business can't see any use for it, I think you need to be across it. And the smart thing to do would be to buddy up with people who do it and then make sure that you can obviously make everybody make some revenue out of it and you get happy customers. But again, huge opportunities because, again, that's typically how we're working today and the expectation of how we'll work in the future.
Indeed.
All right. Well, I think we've probably rambled on and covered enough stuff about social. We probably need to let people get on with the rest of the day. So if you've got any last thoughts to wrap up there, Taz?
I agree with your sentiment that businesses really need to start looking at this stuff. And if they're interested in discussing that, then, they can certainly come to me or yourself. I think it's interesting times in business and people should be looking to capitalize.
Yeah, I think there's never been more opportunity, but it requires a bit of decision, a bit of discipline to sit down and pick what you want to do. You just can't do it all. So how can people get in contact with you if they do want to avail themselves of your services or maybe pass on some comments or some questions?
Of course, they can email me, tass@axiomit.com.au, and Twitter, Tass Gray. And of course, they can look me up on LinkedIn or come through our website, axiomit.com.au.
Cool. So there was no bad feedback from the last episode we did?
None that I'm aware of.
I see. Okay. Well, we'll try and change that. We'll try and offend some people next week. It's always no such thing as bad publicity, as they say. So once again, I thank you very much for your time, Taz. Obviously, it's an investment of your time to come on and discuss these topics, and appreciate you doing that. For me,
pleasure.
My name is, again, Robert Crane. My information can be found at ciaops.com, and the best place to keep up to date with all the stuff that I do is on my blog, which is blog.ciaops.com. This has been another episode of the Need to Know podcast. We'll be back again soon with more information about Office 365 and the cloud. But until then, thank you very much for listening. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.